to CGSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Makassa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. Have we got a treat in store for you. Good morning, good morning. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, here at the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby, streaming worldwide at cjsf.ca. Today, my treat is that we are going to take you to a vision of the Coastal Dance Festival. We have three members from the Coastal Dance Festival. And just before that, Jesse is going to give our land acknowledgement and also connect that to the Coastal Dance Festival.
Thanks, Charlotte. Today's show is being produced and broadcast on the unceded ancestral territory of the Halkamilam and Squamish-speaking peoples. As the first and original storytellers on these lands, we honor the works and words of its first peoples and are honored to share and uplift their legacy through our work in community radio.
We're looking at how this festival is a connector, and it's very different because it seems that you're bringing in indigenous groups and culture from across the country. Margaret Grenier is the festival director, but also the executive and artistic director of Dancers of Damala. Wait, now I mispronounced that. Could you pronounce it for me properly?
Yes, it's the Dancers of Damla Hamid.
Okay. Would you give us an overview of this festival? As the director, you're the director, the artistic director, the genius, it seems, to be trying this 18th year of the festival.
It is the 18th year. The Coastal Dance Festival started in 2008, and at that time, it was through the Cultural Olympiad celebrations here in Vancouver. But there's a predecessor to the festival that started in the 1960s, and that was in the city of Prince Rupert on the northern coast of BC. And at that time, the festival was focused on the revitalization of Indigenous dance practices here on the West Coast following the lifting of the potlatch ban. And so in 2008, we wanted to continue the legacy of the festival and recreate a space that celebrated Indigenous dance traditions from throughout the Northwest Coast and also inviting Indigenous artists from other parts of Turtle Island as well as international artists as well.
So who are some of the artists that have been invited and are participating in this year's festival here?
Well, we have a community of artists as part of our festival. So we have some artists that are returning, representing our local territories, as well as other parts of the coast. So we're very honored to have a number of artists, including Chinook Songcatchers, Rainbow Creek dancers, as well as the Eagle Song dancers and the Gitxaun dancers and Gitxaysk dancers, Yisalin youth from Vancouver Island. So quite a diversity of artists that are returning as well. This year, we are going to be at the Museum of Anthropology again. It's a space that we haven't been returning to for the last 8 years. And there we're going to be this year inviting a group of artists to be part of our artist sharing series, which will include international artists, Joe Clancy of Waigana Dancers from Australia and Charles Coronio, an Indigenous artist from New Zealand.
So tell us a bit about what's happening at the Museum of Anthropology and what's happening at some of the other locations. And are there days, it's reading about it, it seems like there are some days where it's like a workshopping or a sharing between dance groups. But then is the public also invited to those activities?
Yes, there are. Everything is public events. So we have the first 3 days of the festival, March 4, 5, and 6, that'll be at the Museum of Anthropology. We'll have all ages matinees during the day at 11 and 1 p.m. each day. And those are for both schools as well as anyone who comes to the museum with regular museum admission. At 3 p.m. each day, we are going to have our artist sharing series, which are panel conversations with some of our artists, and that will also be with museum admission.
Will the public be able to sit in on those panels, or will the panels just be mostly members of groups, dance groups here?
Oh, yes. No, the public is able to sit in on the panels, and there's no ticketing for them. You can attend just with general museum admission, and they will be in the museum gallery spaces. And then we'll also have in the Haida House, which is a space just as part of the museum, but just outside of the main museum building. We're going to have an installation this year, which will be a durational performance, and that will be with artist Charles Coronijo. The only events that are ticketed are the evening events, and on March 4th and 5th in the evening, we are going to transform the Great Hall of the museum space with lighting, and that those evenings will feature artists, Waigana dancers, as well as Laura Grizzly Paws, and our company, the Dancers of Dam Muhammad, will also be presenting on those evenings. And then on Friday, we move over to the Anvil Center, which is out in New Westminster. And that is going to start on the Friday with school performances, another all ages matinee. And then the afternoons at the Anvil Center are all free by donation. And that's our festival stage performances. And then the Saturday evening at the Anvil Center will also be a ticketed evening event.
It feels like around the world. Can you tell me the ways that you work together in creating this festival and dividing up your labor? It seems like it's different than a lot of companies where the people aren't related or the people are even from different fields. How does it work with you? How do you bring your creativity together harmoniously for such a magnanimous program?
Well, we are a family. We are an intergenerational practice. Our company started under the leadership of my parents, and then my husband, Andrew, who is on the call as well, and I took over in 2008. So the festival was really a vision that was carried forward by our family. And Rebecca, who is also my daughter-in-law, is also the artistic associate with the festival. So as a family, we work together, and maybe Rebecca and Andy can speak a little bit about their roles.
Yes, I'd love to hear that. And I'm sure our listeners, too, because, you know, so much of a lot of things show drama and confusion in families, and you have cohesion and tradition. So, yes, tell us a little bit about how that connects with your life purpose and having such an excellent result.
I am the artistic associate for the dance festival, and I think what makes it really unique in terms of how we work together is just really the common understanding of the purpose and why we do it. Everything that we do is to learn our culture and to maintain it and to pass it on to the next generation. And for the festival, it's really about cultivating a space for other communities and other families and dance groups and artists to come together and share a little bit of where they're from and to practice their dances and their songs. So I think when you have that common understanding and share that goal as Indigenous people, that it makes it quite easy in the sense that you do it out of the love for the next generations to come.
I think it's very brave to invite the public to come in. You don't have a preamble. You know, if you're coming to this, you have to do this and that. What has been your joy or your experience as you invite groups from across the country and also different parts of Vancouver to be involved?
I would say that the community is really the heart of the festival. Something that's different with our festival is that it's not just about sharing new dance works or, you know, really focusing on the specifics of what is being curated each year, but it's more about cultivating a community and really providing a space that inspires and supports our artists. Our artists all come from, you know, different stories. Some of our artists have gone through times in their communities when they have lost their dance traditions altogether and they have worked to bring them back. Others have a really, you know, deep dance lineage that goes back thousands of years and has remained unbroken. And so the festival is about bringing together both emerging and established artists, about really sharing with our audiences the strength of Indigenous dance. And because we have been around for 18 years now, you know, we've seen our youth grow up as part of the festival and then come into their own as young artists and beginning to take over roles of leadership and creating their own works as well.
It only takes the light of one young soul, and they will come. It only takes one small light to see the way.
And that widow Carlson.
Andrew, how does this connect with your passion for theater as well as culture, intergenerational culture?
Yes, I've basically my whole experience with Indigenous art has been around the festival, and I just love being able to facilitate a space where everybody can come and just be themselves. And I think what's unique about our company is that we're dancers ourselves. So when we present people the way we would like to be hosted. And I think that really provides a comfortable space for the artists to really express themselves. And it also creates a beautiful space for non-Indigenous people to come and witness all the cultures of the West Coast that, you know, are so rich and vibrant, and to see that it's a living tradition, not something that's from long ago, which is what, you know, what you like to do at the museum is there's a lot of artifacts, you know, ancient artifacts there, but we try to bring the museum alive and make it create a space of cultures that are moving forward into the future.
Yes, I've seen the exhibition at the museum, and you're right, without people there from the cultures, or people that talk with people while they're watching it, you might just look at it like you look at everything else, but it seems to really provide a unique opportunity to immerse yourself and no more than just what might be on the placards. I know at the museum they installed along some places in the wall, you can push a button and it tells you about a piece of art or it tells you about a particular period. But I think your presence there gives people an opportunity to talk directly and ask more questions rather than just hear a couple of minute recording. In terms of time, what amount of time does it take you in the course of from one year to the other to plan and prepare and connect all these dots that you have?
Well, for us, the artists that are part of the festival, they're really built from a network that grows organically. So while our preparations for the festival are really in the months and weeks leading up to the festival, We're always working to expand those connections. And the reason for that is that there's so much to learn from one another. So we have developed relationships not only with New Zealand and Australia, as what is being shared this year, but down into to South America, as well with Indigenous artists from Norway and Sweden. And through all of this, I think we're not just, it's not just about sharing arts and our artistic practices, but also really, you know, finding a way forward together through our colonial histories, learning from one another, and together it becomes a process of healing and strengthening as well.
In doing the performance and interacting with the public, because in my mind I'm picturing there are people on stage, but then there are also people in the audience. So one year people ask, how should people dress, you know, that are coming to the festival, if they want to feel connected? Are there places that they can buy anything to wear? Or what would you suggest that somebody wants to come and feel like they're participating but don't want to feel like they are improperly dressed or not in connection with what's happening?
There's certainly a lot of symbolism that we carry with everything that we wear when we share through song and dance. And you see that reflected in the audience as well. You know, there's so many Indigenous people that don't have those strong connections to their practices of song and dance. And so, coming to an event like the Coastal Dance Festival allows for, you know, connections to their own communities or, you know, to a practice that maybe they can only access as an audience member. So I think that because the festival really is a festival where we celebrate our identities, the diversity of Indigenous peoples. That's also reflected in our audiences. So I don't think there's anyone who comes to the festival that may not feel comfortable in terms of their appearance or how they've chosen to dress, because I think it's a very inclusive environment. And and we can see that and you know, we have families, children, elders. So it's a very comfortable place for people to just come as they are.
I think your question brings up the question of appropriation versus appreciation also, which is a big conversation within the community of non-Indigenous people. And I think it's important that people feel like they can support Indigenous artists through, you know, what they decide to buy, what they decide to wear, and making sure that those items are made by Indigenous people and who have the right to create those pieces.
And we also have, as part of our, on the weekend at the festival stage at the Anvil Center, we have invited members of the community as well, who will be sharing their art and setting up tables, and there's an opportunity for audience members as well to be able to see what they have to offer and what works they're doing. Some are more contemporary, and some works are more traditional as well in that way.
I see. So at the Anvil Center, will there be tables or areas where people can buy artifacts or clothing or musical instruments?
Yes, we do have a few vendors that will be coming to sell various artworks, jewelry, clothing, and we really look forward to that because there's some quite special pieces that people might be able to see and purchase. And I just want to make note that I do have to go, unfortunately.
Well, I want to thank you for spending time with us. It's exciting looking forward to it and seeing the manifestation of what sounds like just a beautiful, it was so unique. So thank you for spending the time, and thank you for the ways that you have helped connect the generations with this festival.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I wanted to ask, in your design and laying out this festival, it seems like packets and packets. I just see mail and letter. How do you, over the course of the from one festival to the other, how do you keep in touch with people or keep people's excitement or way of hearing the ideas that other people are bringing? People who might have been in before, how do they let you know what they're planning, or how do you let them know what your vision is as the festival director?
I think that it's very much a community where it's very, you know, there's a lot of sharing amongst ourselves and the artists that takes place, and it's very responsive to one another in that way. I think what's really important is that it needs to be the voices of the artists that come forward with the festival each year, and that it could never be imposed on the artist. So there's always changes that happen when you have a practice that goes from generation to generation. There's changes in families, there's changes in communities. You know, our artists are sometimes during the festival time, you know, where they have experienced grief or loss of elders, or, you know, where there's a reflection of younger family members who are, you know, stepping into stronger roles. And you can see that each year at the festival. And so I think that the way that the festival is curated is very much responsive to the changes that are taking place in each of our communities. It's also responsive to the innovation of our artists. I think when our festival first started 18 years ago, you know, there wasn't, there was a real gap between traditional practice and contemporary practices. And I think that that has shifted over time, and you can see innovation that's taking place within traditional practices. You can see contemporary practices that are really drawing from traditions and ancestral knowledge in a way that hasn't been done before. And so I think that when we curate the festival, we're really trying to provide a safe space, a comfortable space where artists have the ability to, you know, be able to share where they are at this time and place, and knowing that, you know, these practices are always changing, and what will be shared in a few years will look differently, and that's what carries the festival forward.
Taking a moment to remind our listeners, this is the Suluau Show, where my guest and I speak up so you can listen up and apply what you've heard. We are talking today about the 18th annual Coastal Dance Festival and how it brings together Indigenous artists to share and support one another in